whatever drug, whether it's TV or whether it's heroin, and they should make it legal.
Any substance could be used to excess.
Yes, of course, especially money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
And thank you, Skidmark Bob, for calling in. And as promised, I'm going to read you a little bit about forfeiture laws from this The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Herer. When the federal government seizes cars, boats, money, real estate, and other personal property, proceedings are set in motion based on laws that originate with medieval superstition. English common law of the Middle Ages provided for the forfeiture of any object causing a man's death. Known as a deodand, the object, such as a weapon or a runaway ox cart, was personified and declared tainted or evil and forfeited to the king. Today's in rem, which means against things rather than against persons, in rem forfeiture proceedings are civil suits against the property itself. Relying on analogy to the deodand, a legal personification fiction declares the property to be the defendant. It is held guilty and condemned as though it were a personality, and the guilt or innocence of the owner is irrelevant. By applying the civil label to forfeiture proceedings, the government sidesteps almost all the protections offered by the Constitution to individuals. There is no Sixth Amendment guarantee of right to counsel. Innocent until proven guilty is reversed. Each violation of a constitutional right is then used as the basis for the destruction of another. The violation of the Fifth Amendment's innocent until proven guilty due process standard is used to destroy the prohibition of double jeopardy. Even acquittal of the criminal charges the forfeiture is based upon does not prevent retrying the same fact. Because even though the government couldn't prove a crime was committed at the second trial, the defendant must provide proof of innocence. The Supreme Court holds that it is unconstitutional to forfeit property in rem from a person who is completely innocent and non-negligent in his use of the property. Lower courts accept prosecutors' arguments that it is permissible to forfeit property from completely innocent people, then constitutional protections could not possibly apply to anyone who is guilty of even a minor drug offense. Unlike civil suits between individuals, the government is immune to countersuit. The government can use its unlimited resources to repeatedly press a suit in the mere hope of convincing one juror the defendant did not provide a preponderance of evidence. Forfeitures imposed by the English Crown led our nation's founders to prohibit bills of attainder, which is a forfeiture consequent to conviction, in the first article of the American Constitution. The main body of the Constitution also forbids forfeiture of estate for treason. The first Congress passed the statute, still law today, stating that no conviction or judgment shall work corruption of blood or any forfeiture of estate. However, early Americans did incorporate in rem, that's in proceedings against a thing, procedures under admiralty and maritime law to seize enemy ships at sea and to enforce payment of customs duties. It was not until the outbreak of the Civil War that these customs procedures were radically changed. The Confiscation Act of July 17, 1862 declared all property belonging to Confederate officers or those who aided the rebels to be forfeitable in rem. The U.S. Supreme Court held that if the act was an exercise of the war powers of government and was applied only to enemies, then it was constitutionally allowable in order to ensure a speedy termination of the war. Today, the passions of the war on drugs have caused Congress to once again use in rem proceedings to inflict punishment without the nuisance of the protections provided by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We have to save our Constitution, says Vicki Winker, whose husband served 2 years in prison for a cannabis offense. We have the truth. And that's what Jack Herer reports about forfeiture laws. And we have in the studio our original host, Mr. Bathrobes Pierre himself, having returned with a, I hope, some exciting report coming up.
Is that true?
Having exciting reports here, Robert?
Winds of change are blowing in this country I love dear. The GOP took Congress and they're moving in high gear. Their contract is full of wondrous stuff. My only hesitation is they won't go far enough. Now I think we'd all agree that welfare's getting out of hand, with teenage moms and school lunch programs bankrupting the land. But orphanages still cost too much dough, and the tykes will be a burden when they grow. Let's have infanticide. It's been so long since it was really tried. The poor and weak ones will provide a final meal of cyanide. The savings would be justified. It's just a modest proposal to help us cut our tax. Of course, we'll wait until they're born, then kick them off our backs. Infanticide. Give kids the axe. I'm sick and tired of hearing senior citizens complain that losing Medicare and Medicaid would cause them pain. Our federal budget can't pay all their bills. I think I've got a cure for all their ills. It's euthanasia. The dollar savings would amaze ya. Now there's a practice really pays ya, though it dismays ya. It worked in Asia. And we wouldn't have to worry about the dread AARP. Their voting block would shrink to nothing if you follow me. Euthanasia for the elderly. America's economy has slipped and we can't stop it, while labor costs and foreign competition cut our profit. It's not enough to cut the minimum wage. I found an answer from another age. Let's bring back slavery. I know it sounds a bit unsavory. Those bleeding hearts might disagree, but they cannot fail to see my bravery. The South has never been the same without the institution, and bottom line adjustments will be up with my solution. Work makes free. Try slavery. It's dangerous to walk the streets because crime is on the rise, but building lots more prisons is a losing enterprise. Alabama brought the chain gang back, but overcrowded prisons need a new plan of attack. We need firing squads, much more effective than those cattle prods. There can't be doubt it will increase the odds. Hesitant prison guards will get to use their rods. And if we need more space, we can appropriate Indian reservation lands. Stem prison overflow by turning all of those into concentration camps and use those firing squads, the ultimate in gun control. I have some other good ideas, but I've gone on too long. So if you think of one yourself, just add it to the song. Soon you'll find we'll have it all our way, for there'll be no one left we have to pay. Yes, we'll have the whole world for our own, as long as I can hold this microphone. That's our broadcast for this evening. Stay tuned, America. Good night.
Wow. That was Mark Levy singing another one of his songs from Born to be Wired. Great tape, and if you're interested in getting a copy of it, do give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, I will put you in touch with Mark. Actually, he's in the phone book, L-E-V-Y, Mark Levy. He's in that little town beyond Boulder Creek, whatever it is, never remember it. But it's in the local book, L-E-V-Y. He's done some great satire and will presumably do some more. He's also very good as a Yiddish singer. And that's another story. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I want to thank my producer, Becky Johnson, for stepping into the breach here. I was off at a meeting with Citizens Police Board member Sandy Brown, who was having her open hour. She, like Becky Blythe, has been holding sort of an open time for members of the public to come and be a part of the process, to get on the agenda if they can, if they want to have issues raised rather than by a bunch of insiders talking to themselves, to actually allow the general community access into the process. Now, the Citizens Police Review Board, for those of you who don't know, is a body appointed by the Santa Cruz City Council, which is currently tied up 3-3. Usually there's a seventh member on. However, Cynthia Matthews has refused to appoint the seventh member because her person, who is a sort of notoriously pro-police person, Bill Christie, was not one that the City Council wanted to vote for. And so when the City Council voted her appointee down, she retired to her tent to sulk and has refused to make an appointment for, I think it's 5 months now. It's been quite a while. Well, we just learned, the compliments of David Silva, who's been investigating the situation, that the City Council has the power to fill that vacant seat. She can't hold that seat vacant forever just because she doesn't like what the majority of the City Council decided to do. But Catherine Byers, our vigilant mayor, what do I call her, Buckshot Byers, she's, when she shoots, it hits all the wrong people, and she seems to be shooting at the wrong people. She's refused to take any action to fill this seat, just as she refused to take any action to dismiss Lisa Rose, who was the person who stalemated the independent investigator when it was raised in June, and finally, indeed, voted for it in July after massive public pressure. The only person speaking against an independent investigation in the case of Steve Argue and the events of May 22nd, where police attacked a noisy but peaceful protest outside the McPherson Center in Yugoslavia, a protest against the bombing of Yugoslavia. Lisa Rose essentially stonewalled that one, and then she turned around and voted for an investigation when only her husband could be found to support her position. It was sort of a sad situation. Rose is apparently now returning her calls. Not apparently, she did return her call to me this week. So she is calling back. The problem with Lisa Rose, as far as I'm concerned, and her other two members of the board, is that they are entrenched in sort of faith in the police department. And if you have faith in the police department, what do you need a Citizen Police Review Board for? Enough said. Catherine Byers, however, regards Rose as, quote, my friend, and therefore will not fire her, or request that she resign and be reappointed by Cynthia Matthews, who really is more her kind of person ideologically, and vice versa, and would be far more appropriate. Instead of having Byers, who supposedly is following the new majority, which the City Council is supposed to be representative of as of the 64% in the last election in November, when a whole new slate was swept into power, Byers is following the old majority, the Rotkin, Matthews, Hernandez gang, the ones that we thought we had voted out. Unfortunately, they're still on board, and unless we make sure that they row to shore and, you know, go back to their homes where they belong, we're going to be stuck with essentially a minority calling the tune of the majority in town in spite of the wishes of the majority, which I suppose it depends on which minority you're a part of, whether you agree with that, but if you believe in the democratic process generally, I think you have some real questions about that whole situation. A couple of comments. As I said, I just came from a meeting with a Citizens Police Review Board member talking about the meeting coming up tomorrow. That's at the City Council Chambers, 5:30, Citizens Police Review Board. The item that has the most publicity that folks are really looking forward to probably with the greatest anticipation is the question of the independent investigator to be appointed in the case of the complaints around the beatings of Steve Argue, the torture of Julianne, the woman who had the child in her arms, and Almond, the man who had the little 2-year-old boy on his shoulders. All these issues finally got the go-ahead to be voted by to be investigated by an independent investigator for the first time in the history of the Citizens Police Review Board. Now the question is, are they really going to appoint an independent investigator? Who are they going to appoint? Well, that's the third item on the agenda at 5:30, and they actually have included in the packet, and you can get this packet tomorrow morning if you're interested, it may even be in the library now, at the 915 Cedar Street is where the CPRB headquarters is. The library, of course, is downtown right across from City Hall. There is a resume of the woman that apparently they want to appoint, Diana Christensen. I should say they, I mean Arnie Leff, the chair of the board, who has apparently been empowered to choose the appointee and bring it back to the board for their, for their comment or for at least to report back to them. This is a woman who was formerly an investigator with the OCC, the Office of Citizen Complaints in San Francisco, which is a sort of a quasi-independent agency connected with the San Francisco Police Department, which researches complaints against the SCPD. And of course, I have no independent information right now on Diane Christensen and have not been able to get any information over the weekend as to what it's all about. But hopefully tomorrow, some of us can contact San Francisco and see if her reputation up there is of a woman who has, in fact, got an independence in her investigations and a vigorous process of truly stepping apart from the police department and seeing what they're doing in a fair and objective light, or whether she is a part of the bureaucracy. Or, for that matter, whether she's some sort of wild-eyed radical who always opposes the police, which I seriously doubt, given the fact that she was a senior investigator in the OCC for a number of years. She now runs her own business up in Berkeley, and she was on the OCC for about 8 years investigating complaints, and she was with Barthel and Vector investigations before that, on the Community United Against Violence before that, and went to the University of San Francisco. Sounds like she had training as a peace officer, and I'm not sure if that was because she was... It may be that I'm not too clear whether the OCC actually consists of police officers. If she actually was a police officer, I would find that peculiar, but again, it's not clear from this resume. She probably wasn't. And this is all going to be coming up tomorrow at 5:30 as the third item on the agenda of the Citizens Police Review Board down at City Hall. There are a couple of other items that are of interest. The first item actually is of interest. John Barisoni, city attorney, will be presenting his view as to what's the confidentiality requirement for the Citizens Police Review Board, which means questions like, what the CPRB usually does is it sits around and waits until the Internal Affairs Department of the police does all its investigations and sends them a report, and then it looks over the reports behind locked doors or closed doors and decides whether it is going to accept those results or not. And in 90% of the cases, it accepts the results, or that's been its record in the past. And in fact, in 100% of the cases, in the cases decided on June 14th, and those cases were, there were four complaints, and they found identical findings with the police chief, and all of them were either exonerated or unfounded, which means they did not sustain any complaints against the police department. I don't know the specifics of these complaints, but I continue to wonder what is happening with our process when these complaints continue to be rubber-stamped by the CPRB. And they were unanimously rubber-stamped, I'd like to point out, except for one, where there was one abstention and 5-4 rubber-stamping. So, I really, when you talk about the meat and potatoes, if you consider the complaints to be the meat and potatoes of the Citizens Police Review Board, it looks like we are getting a pretty pathetic diet here. We are getting a diet of subservience to the police department and to the police chief's perspective. Now, if you want to believe Lisa Rose, it's because the police department does excellent investigations, investigates itself wonderfully, and there's no need for them to ever have any complaints that are different. Or only in very few cases is there ever any cause for a difference of opinion. For some reason, I find that hard to believe, and I guess that's because I have heard, in the course of a week, I come up against so many complaints against the police department from individuals who have a lot of specifics, and you've heard some of them on this show, that I just cannot believe that they're lying or crazy or concealing information to the extent that it would be required not to sustain these complaints, as our police review board and our police department does regularly. But let's ask, what's happening? Well, confidentiality requirements are coming up on the agenda. That means, should the proceedings behind doors where the police review board looks over these police reports be somewhat opened up, or at least amenable to discussion? And obviously they should be, because if it's going to be a community process, if there's going to be confidence in what goes on, then there has to be accountability, and there has to be a sense this is not some sort of star chamber. So that certainly, we hope that confidentiality will be lifted for some parts of that process. The personnel file remains confidential, but there are other parts that don't. Other items that are of interest are discussion of inquiries and complaints, which is where the police department is concealing inquiries from us, that is to say, not forwarding them to the police review board. And this is all, well, there are lots of important items on the agenda tomorrow night, the Citizens Police Review Board, as well as the next day at the City Council meeting. But my agenda has run out, and I have got to walk out myself because it's time for this show to end. I want to thank you all for listening in, and I want you to come back, not tomorrow, but on Thursday at 6 o'clock when we'll be returning with another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. If you have any urgent bulletins or commentary, please give me a call at 423-HUFF. 423-4833, and stay tuned, particularly all you youngsters or all you young at heart folks, for that little red hen who is going to be giving you, she will not be laying an egg, at least I'll put it that way. She's going to come out with some real cool clucking. So stay tuned, stay with us, and stay, I don't want to say stay safe, God, I hate that, but well, come on back.
Happy John Fine was a friend of mine, lived here by the sea. Down on the streets of Santa Cruz, he always laughed at me. Happy and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where's Happy? Shot down today. And it's guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Happy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes, doing the happy bop, when a bullet entered his chest, came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where is Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Now people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on. I know you. Power to the people. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where is Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say, yeah. yes, the police are happy. Sadness here too.
Hard luck than most men.